All right, we are live and rolling. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Hyland. Good evening and welcome to our regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. It is Tuesday, June 7th, 6 o'clock. We have a full quorum. We are back to Zoom meetings via teleconference as COVID numbers have been rising. So we are all playing it safe. We still have opportunities for public participation, though. So the point when we have a chance for that, we will let you know how to contact us. We are called to order, and we will start with a moment of silence. All right. Thank you. Do we have any planning commissioner announcements this evening? Seeing none, we will move on to the consent calendar. We have two items there, the current and advanced planning processing list. I'm sure you have all read through it very carefully. And we have approval of minutes from the March 15th, 2022 Planning Commission meeting. Do we have any questions, comments? I see a hand raised. Mike.
Oh, I was just going to go ahead and make a motion to approve.
We could do that, and then we could have discussion if we need it. Do we have a second on that motion? Asia wants to do a second. I can tell. She's Okay. Asia's nodding the second. Do we have any discussion? Looks like we're good. All right. Who wants to call it?
Give me one second here.
Okay.
Commissioner Ingrappia.
Yes.
Commissioner King. Commissioner Rodriguez?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Roshan?
Yes.
Chairperson Stewart?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Thank you. So we will move on. You know what? We need to do public comment for things which are not on the agenda. I am very sorry I missed that. Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue waiting for public comment for items not on the agenda?
Thank you, Chair. We have one raised hand from Betty Winholtz.
Perfect. Let's hear from Betty. Sorry about that, Betty.
No problem. This is Betty Winholtz. My comment is in regard to your meeting again on the Zoom, and I guess the way maybe this can happen is for staff to pass on a message to the general, to the city manager and to the city council that, you know, a notice came out this week that Councilmember Addis is going to be having a celebration party for her campaign. And I'm assuming that maybe some of the council people will be there, and at least she will be there and she will be in person. And I'm wondering how it is that people can be in person and yet say that we can't have our city meetings in person. It's a little contradictory to me, and so I would like that reexamined at the staff level and at the city council level, because even though a few of us will participate on the Zoom, while you did meet in person, I think you noticed that more people attended and got involved, and I think it's easier for people to do that. Plus, we cannot see you. You know, we see the person that's talking, but we don't see all five people, like at City Council or Planning Commission or PWAB, so we can see how people are responding to our comments. So I would like to press on you to move along and encourage staff and council to take us out of Zoom and back to in-live meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Appreciate those comments. Hyland, do we have anybody else?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
All right, then now we will move on to public hearings. We have one, site location 301-390 Seashell Cove, Morro Bay, and I believe Ms. Jacinth is up for this.
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners. I will share my screen. Okay, I think this is it. Okay, can you see the screen?
Yes.
Great. So, good evening, everyone. This is a request for a general plan, local coastal program, coastal land use plan map amendment. It is for 301 to 390 Seashell Cove and adoption of a mitigated negative declaration. a vicinity map of the project area as shown here on the screen, with the project area being located nearest Teresa Road and South Bay Boulevard. Okay. I reordered the slides that were in the staff report to slightly different. So in your staff report, I think this is page 8 of the presentation. So just in case everyone's following along with the PDF file, just wanted to give you a heads up. I did this just for organizational. This being slide number 2 now, this item is before the Planning Commission because amendments to the city's land use map, require public hearing review by Planning Commission with a recommendation for approval to City Council. Amendments approved by City Council are then required to be certified by the Coastal Commission as an LCP amendment. And the action requested by the Planning Commission tonight is to make a recommendation for City Council. The corresponding zoning map change from the current RA to RH or high density residential would be achieved through the draft zoning map update. And that zoning code update is anticipated to be adopted later this summer. Okay. The existing land use designation is low density residential. This is an aerial image of the site with the red arrow pointing to the area. And the request by the applicant, which is Steiner Development LLC, is to change the land use to high density residential. The project site totals 4.7 acres, with each lot ranging in size from 0.3 to about 0.6 acres. The location of the property is adjacent to Bayside Care Center to the east. It's north of Highway 1 and with vacant low-density residential land uses to the north and east. This slide is an image of the land use map showing the parcel lines. And it also shows the site location outlined in red as indicated by the arrow. The image also shows its proximity to Bayside Care Center here to the east, and then the yellow shaded area indicates the low density residential land use. This slide is an image of the existing land use map with the site, this slide depicts the current and proposed land use map. The low density residential designation is intended to accommodate single family homes and some group housing uses. And the high density residential land use is intended to accommodate multifamily housing, including apartments, townhomes, condominiums, and some group housing uses. The high density residential land use does not include commercial uses in the land use description. So just wanted to point that out. To give you a little bit of background on this site, this is a complicated site. The vacant residential lots were approved by Planning Commission in 2009 as Tract 2870, and that created the subdivision known as Seashell Estates. The tract improvements, including the street shown in this image, were completed in 2014. The subdivision was approved pursuant to the city's conservation subdivision ordinance, with each of the lots envisioned to be custom single-family homes that would be subject to CC&Rs in a design manual. The approvals dictated numerous restrictions, including a maximum 6,600 square foot building footprint, of which within that could only be a maximum 3,600 square foot building envelope. It also included height restrictions, ESHA setback criteria, and landscape guidelines in order to cluster development by preserving open space within the residential development, provide flexibility, and minimize land use, and minimize land disturbance consistent with the low density land use. This was accepted by the property owner at the time, an applicant, to facilitate the type of custom home subdivision that they envisioned would be built in this area on this property. The subdivision approvals as a result of these restrictions limited allowed density to approximately 1.5 acres, or what would be the equivalent of 41 units under a high density land use designation. So the request for the land use map change, at this time, no development is proposed for the property. The applicant is only seeking to change the land use. They have indicated a desire, and this is described also in the environmental review document, the MND. The applicant has indicated a desire to develop the property with up to 70 units of multifamily housing, which is what requires the land use map change. The change in land use designation is consistent with City Council's housing goals, including one of the short-term action items, which is to bring forth a land use amendment forward for this property. The current land use designation of low density is 4 dwelling units per acre. Changing it to high density land use would technically allow, or would it would allow up to 27 dwelling units per acre, or what would technically be 127 units with the simple math calculation. However, the city calculates density based on net buildable area, not gross. And as explained in the staff report, the project site is encumbered by a PG&E power line easement, multiple drainage, utility, road, and access easements, as well as riparian ESHA buffers on lots 1 through 3, open space and conservation easements on all 10 lots, and then the existing tract map restrictions. These constraints limit buildable area to approximately 1.5 acres, which under a high density land use would equate to 41 units. For the applicant to develop a future multifamily residential project beyond the amount dictated by the subdivision approvals, or more than 41 units, would require an amendment to those subdivision approvals that would come forth in the future. And as part of the environmental review for the project, a mitigated negative declaration was prepared, and it was routed for the required 30-day comment period to the State Clearinghouse. As a result of the project review, mitigation has been incorporated into the mitigation and monitoring program for the following factors: aesthetics, air quality, biological resources, cultural resources, and greenhouse gas emissions. The city received 3 comment letters during this period, and a response to comments was prepared and is attached to the staff report. 2 of those letters from APCD and Department of Toxic Substance Controls did not require any revision to the MND. A 3rd comment letter was received from the Salinan Tribe requesting archaeological monitoring, and we have incorporated that into the updated mitigation and monitoring plan. And that resulted in the final MND that is before the Planning Commission tonight for adoption. Oops, sorry, went back too far. So in conclusion, the request for the general plan land use map amendment is to facilitate a future multifamily residential project by changing the land use map from low density to high density residential. The applicant has indicated a desire to do up to 70 units, but no development is proposed at this time. And the actual number of units will really be driven by the current subdivision approvals and the conservation restrictions, which limit that to approximately 1.5 acres, or what would be 41 units if we factor in the high density land use designation. This request is consistent with the City Council's housing goals, City Council's short-term action item for a land use amendment at this property. It's also consistent with the draft zoning map and the purpose of and intent of the GPLCP Coastal Land Use Plan. So staff's recommendation is that the Planning Commission forward a favorable recommendation for approval to the City Council by adopting Planning Commission Resolution 0622, which includes the findings for this case number MAJ21-002, and also adopt a mitigated negative declaration. And with that, I am available for any questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much for that report. I'm going to start us off with some questions. We'll do questions of staff, then we will do public comment, and then we will bring it back to our discussion. So first question, what exactly triggered the request to change from low density to, was that the applicant? Was it because council is interested in the increased density and more housing? What was the initial trigger for this?
So the initial trigger, and the applicant submitted their application to us a little over a year ago, but for whatever reason, the subdivision never was developed in the way that it was envisioned with the 10 lots. The property sold to this applicant, and they approached the city about wanting to do multifamily housing. There was originally the thought that they could accommodate the project with a medium density land use designation, but that was before the realization of the subdivision restrictions and really the site constraints and slope and numerous easements. And so it's now a request for the high density. And okay. then also, you know, the city council's major goals include bringing more housing and increasing the range of housing opportunities. One of the things that the city really hasn't done well on in past years is providing multifamily housing. We do a good job with single family housing, but there's been very few multifamily housing projects. And I can't think of one multifamily housing project more than four units in the last, you know, decade that the city has done as a market rate or even affordable development, other than the ones that were done by Haslow and People Self Help.
Right. Which sort of jumps at, well, I'll go in order of my questions. So that explains there is a different owner from the initial project. For whatever reason, that one just didn't work out. There were a couple questions on the emails we received from public comment. Why don't we have a project first? And I think it's important to, again, explain that before you can have a project come forward that is needing this kind of zoning, you have to have the zoning to be appropriate for the project. Is that correct?
Right. So the applicants here in the comment area, they are the two phone call-in listeners, so I'm sure that they'll speak to us. But for them, it's a financial consideration. Sometimes we would see development at the time of the land use amendment. It doesn't have to be that way in this situation. They really want to have that surety, knowing that because we're in the coastal zone and because any changes to the land use map are a lengthy process that require Planning Commission, City Council, and Coastal Commission review, they wanted to know if it was possible to change the land use. And so they have not yet done the engineering and all of that detailed design development.
Right. Before they know whether it would be possible.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Chair Stewart, I would also say this. It's also a little bit of the city's putting its best foot forward. Mm-hmm. You know, as it relates to housing, the city's been saying that, you know, we support housing, we support affordable housing, we support workforce housing and all these types of things. But the city has not in the past, you know, had applications come forward to change land use to increase density. So this is also a little bit of that, I would say as well. It's the city kind of putting its best foot forward, too, to show that it does support this type of development. And then justifies the applicants spending, you know, a considerable amount of money on plans to go back through a process to gain approval for a multifamily development.
Right. Okay. Another question from one of the public comments: would restrictions from the original subdivision remain? That is, limit to a 6,600 square foot building envelope with the remaining area transferred to open space. It feels like that answer is likely yes.
Yes.
Okay. And then back to, again, the city's commitment to housing, but challenges of finding locations for this higher density affordable housing. what other options do we have? I can think of maybe two other places in the city that could conceivably be considered, up on North Main, and then potentially the Morrow Elementary site, but that's school district. It depends on what they are interested in doing with that. Is that about it?
I'm going to see if Scott wants to answer that question.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, Chair Stewart. There's the North Bain lot that's owned by Chevron. That's a high density residential. Could build up to 200-ish units there, I believe. I don't know what the school district's going to do. I mean, certainly they've talked to us about doing housing there, but I don't know that that's actually the direction they're looking at now. I think they're looking at some other things now. They haven't really come back to the city to tell us what they want to do. At least recently they haven't talked to us. And then we have the, you know, kind of single family development that's up in the Panorama area, right? Where the tanks used to be. Those are going to be standalone single families. That application's in-house right now with the city, as you're well aware. So.
Okay. And then everybody's minds is on water. I'm assuming that water equivalency unit report will be coming up fairly soon. I think last year we had it in May, where they allocate units for residential and commercial development in the upcoming years. Is that coming forward soon?
Yeah, that's correct, Chair Stewart. It's going to the Public Works Advisory Board, I believe, on the 15th. Mm-hmm. And then it's coming to Planning Commission at your next Planning Commission meeting, which is the 21st. Okay. And it'll have both the water report and the water equivalency unit allocation.
Okay. And did we ever hit a point where we have approved too much development for these, or actually had it come to fruition for these water equivalency units? So, you know, say we say we're going to have 60 for residential, and all of a sudden we have 70. Is that?
That hasn't really come to fruition since I've been here at the city. I'm unaware if it's happened in the past or not. I don't believe that it has. And normally what happens is we don't use all of the allocation.
Right.
Right. That's normally what happens is we don't use them all. Mm-hmm. Certainly if you have a multifamily, you know, subdivision, then, you know, the potential's there. But it's also unlikely that they would, you know, they would build all of the units in a single year. So we would be really looking carefully at the allocation and how that would work moving forward as a project like that would come forward. We'd have to be, you know, I think we have to look at that and see how they would be phasing it or not, or how they would be phasing it and that type of thing.
Okay.
And I would just say that regarding that question, the water equivalency, from what I've seen in my past working on previous housing elements before our current one, we didn't come anywhere close to using all of our WEUs. And for context, I think we all recall the housing boom of 2007, 2008-ish, that era. Even then, we didn't come close to, we were still at less than half. But just throwing that out there for some context.
Okay. And final question for me for now, and I already asked it to Cindy, but I'm going to, on email, but I'm going to repeat it so the public and commission can hear. Regarding the mitigated neg deck, if and when they come forward with a project, you indicated to me they would likely be required to update it, have further studies, certainly in terms of traffic. Again, we'd have to look at the water, which sounds like should be available, environmental issues, that sort of thing. So in other words, this mitigated neg deck is basically for the rezoning, but if they come forward with a project, they would likely be required to sort of reopen many of those.
So the MND does cover, so if they fit the project exactly within the subdivision approvals, so mm-hmm. they get 41 units, maybe it's going to be 30, 35. I don't know what it would end up being, but if they fit it exactly consistent with the subdivision approvals, they would not need to redo the MND. They would be subject to all of the mitigation in it. They'd be subject to doing a visual impact assessment. Mm-hmm. We did a traffic study based on up to 70 units that found less than significant impacts. The question is if they need to change the project, because once they do engineering and they realize they just cannot fit within the constraints and they need to amend those subdivision approvals, mm-hmm. we have to look at what's the environmental process to amend that. But right now it's it evaluated impacts based on the envelope, no pun intended, of that original subdivision approval.
Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I see Mike has a hand up for a while here. Mike, have you got some questions for staff?
Yeah, I just want some clarification from Cindy. Cindy, you know, you had that slide where you have that road leading up, which was the track improvement. Mm-hmm. Can you show that slide again? I just want to go over that real quick.
Sure.
Okay. And when you started the presentation, I didn't know whether to go at the beginning of my file or at the end of my file. So I had to rush down to the end because you started at the end.
Sorry. Yeah, I slide two.
That's okay.
Used to be slide eight. So, yeah. But
on my report, it's page 110. So, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
On staff report, you know, on our reports, yes. I just thought I'd tell you that.
Okay.
We have to kind of,
yeah, okay. Good to keep that in mind.
Yeah. So I just want to ask this question here because I caught it. So the Planning Commission approved the track on development here in 2009, mm-hmm. right? Let's do that first. Okay, and then in 2014, you did your track improvement. Now, was the Planning Commission part of that, the track improvement?
No, because that's not a requirement. It just took them that long to finish the track improvements.
Yeah, but the Planning Commission really didn't touch it after 2009. That's the point I was trying to make. Okay, and then the other clarification I'd like to make is on page number 21, it talks about the review process, requirements, regulations, but it says here that the 2021 General Plan Local Coastal Program Land Use Plan, also known as Plan Morro Bay, was adopted by the city in May 26, 2021. Mm-hmm. Again, was the Planning Commission, did we give our input on that, or
yes.
was that the council's? I mean, because I don't remember that.
So the Planning Commission forwarded a favorable recommendation to adopt Plan Morro Bay in March of 2021.
Okay, so that was before my time. So thank you. So, yeah, that's all I wanted to know because, again, I think this is in our wheelhouse. You know, housing is big for us. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to get the flavor as to when the last Planning Commission really dealt with this project. It's going to be the biggest of its time, of its kind, multifamily. Mm-hmm. So I think the Planning Commission really needs to look at it closely. Yeah. So the last time any Planning Commission really looked at this was in 2009. Is that correct or not?
That would be accurate.
Okay. So that's all I wanted to clarify because I think that's important. So the Planning Commission, this is our job. So, you know, housing is very important. We support the policy, but we really, this is going to be huge for the city. So I'm going to take my time and make sure we do a good job on this. Thank you.
Sure.
That's all for me for now, Susan.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Rodriguez. And just a reminder, we don't actually have a plan before us yet. So
if
when they come forward, I imagine we will have lots of opportunity for input in this project. And Mr. Roshan has his hand up next.
This is for Cindy. Cindy, I want to be clear. Is the MND based on the 71 units or the 40 some?
It's it evaluates impacts up to, well, it describes the fact that what the applicant is desiring to do, but makes it very clear that no development is proposed at this time. So it describes the request to do up to 70 units. The traffic study, which was one of the technical studies for the MND, evaluated for up to a potential 70-unit project. But it recognizes that under the high-density land use and the development restrictions, they likely could only go up to 41 units.
Yeah, but my concern is, would the MND be enough? You said it had to match mm-hmm. the project. Mm-hmm. Would it have to match 71 units or the 40-some units? Would it be restricted to 40-some units for the MND to be, you know, usable?
Yeah. So, I mean, as it stands right now, it really is limited to 41 units because the MND evaluated the impacts under the guise of all of those development restrictions. So right now they're subject to those subdivision approvals, which means it's a 6,600 square foot building envelope, and it's all of that. So,
but couldn't it be argued, because they based it on the 71 units, that there was an evaluation based on that density?
There was an evaluation based on that density subject to what the subdivision approvals allow for. So, I mean, that's really the other side of the coin. There's two things happening here. There's a high density land use designation says 27 dwelling units per acre. I mean, one could also argue that they could go up to 127 dwelling units per acre. Mm-hmm. That won't happen because the other side of the coin
had thresholds, right? And what I'm saying is the 71 units was the threshold used in the MND.
Mm-hmm. 70 units. Yeah. And that's really, you know, because CEQA as a disclosure document, that's really to put it out there that this is what they've originally has said to us that they would like.
I understand all that. I'm wondering, though, what the threshold would be. Scott, do you have an answer for that?
You're muted, Scott.
The MND in the project description says that this document evaluates impacts resulting from a maximum of 70 units. As the applicant has indicated that with the future applications for development, they may seek to amend the building envelopes to get to that number.
So this MND might suffice for up to 70 units.
So what would happen here is any project that comes forward, we would have to look at it, and we would have to look at any impacts that would be created from what the project looks like, mm-hmm. and we would have to compare that to the MND. If the MND didn't evaluate those impacts, then we would have to do a subsequent document. Environmental.
Right. To be completely clear, if we match it, it's up to the density of 70 units per the MND.
Yeah, the MND covers it from a evaluation and mitigation standpoint.
Okay. My second question, and this is one I asked Scott prior, but I wanted to get it on the public record. This is a substantial upzone. And we're creating a lot of value in this land, not based on a project. Is there any way to condition a zone change? And I asked Scott that question, and Scott, do you want to tell me what you found?
Yeah, so our initial conversation on that topic, you know, my initial response was no. I did clarify with the city attorney's office, and that was also the response that I received from the city attorney, Chris Neumeyer, was that we don't have any ability to condition the project, because really what this is we're changing the land use map, and there's no project associated with it.
Right. So I just wanted to make clear that we're offering a substantial increase in density. This is a big jump, and not that it's not the right thing to do, but there's no way at this point to condition it without a project. So that's probably accurate, right?
That's correct. Yeah. If you're looking at doing conditions for a project, you have to have a project condition. So
yeah, exactly. We'd be approving the density, right? Which would give the developer much more control over the process at that point, because it was now rezoned, right?
That's the concept. And, you know, like I was saying in response to Chairperson Stewart's comments earlier, this is also a little bit of like the city putting its best foot forward, kind of putting its money where its mouth is, saying that we do want housing. And so this shows, you know, a developer that we are interested in doing that, and we are interested in facilitating it. So it's kind of along those lines, I guess.
Well, that's the justification, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Roshan. I see Joe's hand up next.
I see that the short-term action goal in the Morabay plan is to zone this property from 7 to 15 units. Is that correct, Cindy?
That is correct, because at the time of adoption of that goal, the thought was that the medium density, 15 dwelling units per acre. There's 4.7 acres, 15 times 4 is 70 units, and it was thought that that would be sufficient. But it didn't account for the subdivision restrictions. And so we made a recommendation to modify it to the high density land use designation, which might get closer to the number that they're seeking.
Now, when you say it didn't account for that, you mean the city council wasn't aware of the restrictions? Or is it just as conceivable that they did take something into consideration that meant that they would be able to build something less than 15 units?
What I meant was that it didn't account for it because of the permit conditions on the Seashell Estate subdivision. I wasn't at the city council meeting, but I when that was adopted, but when we did further evaluation on the project, it became apparent that the ESHA requirements, the slope considerations, the numerous easements, and the building envelope requirements, it limited, it left a lot of density on the table, so to speak, with that project, so that only about 1.5 acres is buildable. And so 1.5 acres at a high density land use is about 41 units. At medium density, that's about 22.5 units.
Commissioner Agrafia, the discussion's always been like, even during the goal setting process, was the number that we were looking at potentially getting to was the 70. So that's why it's high density now, because when we actually started looking at all of the conditions that are on that project, currently we realized we couldn't get there with the medium density.
Because that was going to be my next question, because I thought it was kind of curious in setting the density rather than just posting a maximum, say 15, there was a range. So I took that to mean that there were at least some people of the opinion that they wanted to preserve the option for the lesser density of 7 units per acre, and I'm beginning to hear that might have been correct.
We were always talking around that 70 number, up to 70 units. We didn't know if we'd be able to get there or not because of site constraints. But then when we really looked at it dug into it, it became very clear that if you were at medium density, you wouldn't get anywhere near that because of the developmental limitations for the footprints out there. And like Cindy said, you're in the 20 unit range if you're there, and really only get to that 40, 41 unit number under high density under current conditions on that project.
Okay, well, I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure if we're saying the same thing. I'm thinking that I interpret the existence of the range as that short-term goal, meaning that there were people who were favoring 7 units per acre rather than 15.
The range, Commissioner Agrafia, is actually set by our land use plan. Those are our density ranges for medium density. They're 7 to 15 units per acre. High density is 15.1 to 27 units per acre. It's solely based on the range. That's what it is. That's what the range is.
Right. Okay. Those are my questions.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Asia?
So I'm just trying to wrap my head around a couple things. Going back to the draft zoning map that is in process, the draft I was reading has this to be zoned as is. Is that correct? Or are you guys saying that it's being, the draft zoning map was to move it to the medium density?
So the draft zoning map, we would change that to a high or RH is what it's called, high density residential zoning. The draft zoning ordinance was last reviewed by Planning Commission in December. Mm-hmm. So the last version of the zoning map that the commission saw may not reflect the most recent changes, just because we're still working on final touches before we bring it back to the commission later this summer.
And if this doesn't move forward, Commissioner King, if this doesn't move forward through city council and get approved, we wouldn't be making any changes
right
to it. It would just stay the the low density. So.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm wondering is, like, in the process, I know this process isn't complete for adopting the new zoning map, but in the process so far, this site hadn't been updated to a new zoning, to a higher residential density. I guess what I'm saying is, like, there, prior to this ask from the applicant, this lot was not going to be upzoned.
Correct. Yeah. The initial draft zoning map is reflective of the land use plan. So we adopted the land use plan last year under Plan Morro Bay, and that shows it as low density residential. Zoning always implements the land use plan. And so the thought was that this would also be low density residential. But and originally the applicant had applied for both a land use and a zoning map amendment early in 2021. It just so happened that because of the time that it took to complete the MND, we're able to update the zoning map should the land use plan map amendment also get approved.
Okay. And so my next question is, could you explain one more time the subdivision restrictions?
Yes. So the cities has a the city has a conservation subdivision ordinance, and it's really reflective of clustering development in order to, it has numerous goals that are described, but basically to minimize land disturbance, promote or preserve environmental attributes. It limits development footprints. For example, the Cloisters was approved as a conservation subdivision. So Seashell Estates, when that was approved, the applicant at that time envisioned that they would have some type of custom home, large lot subdivision that was going to be very Sea Ranch-esque. If folks are familiar with that infamous planning community in Northern California, but it was going to be very low density. And so the applicant accepted the approvals in 2009 with all of these restrictions that limited, you know, the lots range in size between 14,000 and 30,000 square feet. So to have a lot that only has a 6,600 square foot building envelope really kind of underscores that there was going to be a good portion of the property that would be put into conservation afterwards. And so that was the thought. For whatever reason, though, the properties never developed. There was only one lot that ever received its planning permit approvals, and that one obviously never moved forward.
So those subdivision restrictions stay in place should the zoning change?
Right, and because it was recorded with the tract map, so those are recorded against the property, and those restrictions remain. The applicant has previously said that they would work within those restrictions and limit the building envelope to the 6,600 square foot. You know, within that envelope, there's a 3,600 square foot building footprint they would be required to place the buildings. So, yeah.
Okay, I guess my other question is, is there like an example that you can give us or Scott can give us of this jump in rezoning that the city has approved in the recent past, in the last few decades? I'm just wondering what that process might have looked like in the past with the city.
You mean where both land use and zoning are changed?
Yeah, like, is there an example where this, significant?
So the very most recent one, and it's a small one, is the one that Nancy brought forward, 1260 Main. That's just a single lot. Before that, in 2003, there was a property on Atascadero Road that was changed from a mixed commercial residential to a commercial zone, and that's near the location of where the affordable housing project is. We don't do many land use and zoning amendments just because they are a lengthy process. I think, you know, in the past, the city hasn't approved these just because there hasn't been that type of interest from the development community. I don't know if I'm giving you a good answer. I want to say, like, near Atascadero Road and Sunset, there was a zoning change in the early 2000s.
I don't know if you'd remember, but did those come with projects in hand? Was there like a revision project or process back and forth afterwards?
I don't believe there was a project in hand. I'm pretty sure not, just because the lot was vacant for years afterwards. But I'm kind of going off the top of my head here. So, and I didn't work here in 2003, but I have done research into the LCP amendment history of the city. So I presume that it didn't include a development application at that time.
Okay. Those are all my questions right now, I think. Thanks.
Thank you, Asia. Mike, did you have more questions?
Yeah, I just have one follow-up, only because a couple of the commissioners have hit it. We got some, you know, requests from the public for this clarification. But before I get to that, I just want to clarify what Susan asked at the beginning, which is what triggered the request. It sounded like there may have been two applicants. Like, 1 year ago, somebody came forward, applicant A, and then shortly after that, since nothing happened, applicant B came forward. Is that true or not true? Is it the same person or applicant?
For this project?
Yes.
Oh, no, it's the same one.
Applicant. Okay.
Yeah, they first submitted their land use amendment application early last year. It's taken a while to come to Planning Commission because going through the environmental review process, but it's the same individual.
Okay, good. That's all I wanted on that one. Now let me get to the real deal. Okay, so you get to page 21. I think Bill hit on it and Asia hit on it, and that's regarding the rezone zoning map update. It says the city is currently in the process of adopting a new zoning code implementation plan as part of Morro Bay in anticipation of the proposed land use map amendment request and to be consistent with the proposed land use. The draft zoning map has been updated to reflect the corresponding designation changing from RL, low density, to RH, high density. The current zoning code designation for the site is R-A/PD. With the plan development overlay. Now that's what I want to get to, the plan development overlay. Tell me how it sounds like it'll work with 41 or 70, depending on what we do, and then there's going to be a plan development overlay. We don't really get that a lot, but can you explain that to us?
Sure. So in the new zoning code, we actually won't have the plan development overlay that we know of today. Currently, the site is part of a plan development overlay, and the PD overlay, what that is in our current zoning code, is that applies to properties on the waterfront, publicly owned land, properties over an acre, usually high visible areas, and so this area being at the entryway to the city, it's, you know, in its location. It has that PD designation, but in our new zoning code, we don't have that PD designation just because of the way that the zoning code's been reformatted. So, because we are so close to adopting the new zoning code, that should the city approve the land use map designation change to the high density residential, that's going to happen around the same time as the zoning code, but if they don't approve it, then we won't need to update the zoning map.
And it sounds like you hit on that when you were, you know, responding to Bill and Asia a little bit. You hit on how things are going to change, but it's right there in black and white, right? In other words, I understood that this would happen depending on whether it goes forward. But if it doesn't go forward, nothing would happen. But ready for whatever scenario sounds like.
Yeah, and I it's a draft zoning map, so nothing's been approved yet. And you'll see it when we bring the zoning code back to the commission later this summer. And Should the land use map proceed tonight and go on to city council, then you'll see that, oh, the zoning map's been updated. If it doesn't, then we don't update the zoning map. So
perfect, because the report read like you're ready for either scenario.
Right there.
Okay, good. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thanks, Mike. Joe, you had another question?
Yeah. Hi, Cindy. Just so I can sort of get my head around this. Right now, the property is zoned with a minimum, with a maximum of 4 units. Mm-hmm. Then I see in the Morro Bay plan, there is this short-term action goal to upgrade it to 7 to 15, and the applicant would like us to formally put into the zoning code the ability to put in 27 units. Now, I realize that there are all kinds of limitations with respect to ESHA and easements and footprints, but what I just stated is correct. It's currently 4. There's a short-term goal of 7 to 15, and the applicant would like to raise it to 27. Is that correct?
Up to 27, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to understand that. Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and that number is gross, but
yeah. I got that. And there is nothing to preclude the applicant from providing some kind of a plan, whether it's a highly detailed plan or a rudimentary plan. But there's nothing to preclude him from providing something in the way of additional information at this point, other than the difficulty and the financial expense associated with doing that before he gets his zoning change. Is that correct? There's preventing him from submitting a plan to the city. Of course, there's financial costs involved in that.
Right. I think that's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Asia, you have another question?
Yeah. And this might be able to wait for our discussion time, but I'm wondering, Cindy, if you could explain how a development like this would work if these parcels are upzoned to high density and this owner or a future owner wants to develop on them. What are the rules around or the regulations around affordable housing requirements for multifamily housing in this area?
Yeah, so we are in the process of updating our inclusionary housing ordinance to really kind of strengthen that to be more pro-housing. But currently what the requirement would be is that they would be required to provide 10% of the units as deed-restricted affordable units. And by deed-restricted, that would be deed-restricted to 55 years.
So 10% of whatever is built has to mm-hmm. be moderate, low, or?
In our draft inclusionary housing ordinance, it specifies very low, low, or moderate income.
So it could be moderate. And then what other mechanisms could whoever developed the land at this higher density, what other mechanisms are there available for them to available for the city to incentivize more affordable housing in the development?
So when they come forward with an application, that'll be subject to a discretionary review process. We do have incentives in our housing ordinance that encourage more affordable units. And state law allows developers to partake of various incentives available to them as well.
So I guess, yeah, so I'm wondering if the current restrictions in this upzone scenario practically allows for about 40 units, mm-hmm. it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be conditions or allowances if additional affordable units were proposed. For, what I'm trying to say is they could build more. There's essentially regulations in place that they could build more units if they include a higher percentage of affordable units.
That's correct.
Yeah, they could get a density bonus, basically, is what it's called.
Right.
Depending on the number of affordable units and the level of affordability they provide.
And so does the current, plan development restrictions or subdivision restrictions, would basically be able to be surpassed with those density bonuses? It doesn't stop the current subdivision requirements. Density bonuses from happening.
No, because they can apply for a density bonus, but it's still required to be consistent with the general plan and local coastal plan. So if the GPLCP says you're required to meet certain setback criteria, they can't, I mean, Scott can correct me if I'm wrong, but they can't like build out at 100% lot coverage and excavate out the whole mountain. Of course, financially that would be impossible, but there is an inherent limitation to that.
Right. Okay. Thanks for the clarity.
Joe, did you have another question?
I wanted to continue Asia's and get clarity on this. Right now, you can go to density bonus, but it would be limited by the zoning. So by state law, they could increase their density through the density bonus. Is it fair to say roughly 20%? Is that a rule of thumb, Cindy?
It depends on the affordability mix of the units.
I'm just kind of getting a rough idea. Because if we approve the upzone through the density bonus, they could then do an increase on the upzone. Independent of public review. I mean, density bonus is not subject to public review. Density bonus is a state law that allows for more housing, but without condition. Am I misstating that?
They would still be required to get a coastal development permit and other discretionary permits for that. So that's
right.
I mean, our housing ordinance is part of our zoning code, and they apply for a density bonus, but they're still required to comply with, we're making findings that it's consistent with our GPLCP.
Density becomes somewhat by right in a density bonus.
It does, and it does allow them to ask for exceptions so they can get the density. Those could be the development standards by sheriff.
Right, the exceptions, and there's a complicated formula to all of that. But to Asia's point, they could increase the density without, let's call it, any kind of community benefit by a substantial amount, I would say 20%, based on the high density zone rather than the current density. Does that make sense, Asia?
Yeah, I think, though, the community benefit would be the additional affordable housing.
But that's the question is that you could be very right, but that takes that question away from the community. That once the high density zoning is complete, there is no longer a participation around that.
Exactly.
So not that that's not a benefit, and it is. Certainly in this community, it's a big benefit, but it limits it to that one benefit.
Because it's by right, basically, yeah.
Yes.
Wouldn't they still have to stick with that footprint, though? So in other words, maybe you would have more smaller units, but you would still have to be in the footprint that is allowed. Is that correct?
That could be the case, Chairperson Stewart. They could also seek amendments to the original track conditions, to fit whatever the development is they come forward with. Some of those things can be changed.
That would be reviewed by us, though, or you.
Yeah, they would have to amend those original permits, and those would come back to the planning commission. Would have to be yes, that's fine, or it's not okay.
Okay.
Wouldn't there be certain conditions under the density bonus that they could get a height increase, for example, that would allow for greater square footage that would not come to us?
No, it would all be part of the package that gets approved through Planning Commission. It's just, some of it's not discretionary. That's, you're correct. Like they,
what I'm trying to say is that it's not that it doesn't come before us, but we no longer have the ability, right, to influence height, maybe, because of the density bonus on a higher density project. That's one of the benefits of density bonus is height.
Height, setbacks, things like that.
Doesn't it say 25 feet is the maximum height in this particular area?
Not the density bonus is involved. It adjusts the zoning height.
Okay. Joe, your hand is still up, but did you have another question? Or are you just, your hand is still up?
No, I'm just ridiculous in terms of technology. My hand's not up.
Okay, no hand. We've had a lot of questions. I feel like we should go to public comment now, and we'll come back for discussion. So,
and I think our applicant has their hand raised.
Let's do the applicant first, then. Absolutely. So, Hylan, can we put the applicant on?
All right. The applicant has been allowed to talk, and will need to unmute themselves.
Good evening, everybody. This is John Hinchin with Steiner Development, and wish I could be there in person, but we're doing it this way. That's cool. I just wanted to thank staff very much. Cindy and Scott have been very helpful on this. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Anyway, what I wanted you to be mindful of is with the topography of this site, you know, the steepness and so forth, I really don't anticipate being able to get more than 40, and it's probably going to be somewhere between 30 and 40. And so we're not trying to get a 70 units on there, that's for sure. And we do have those constraints that limit us anyway. So and the purpose of taking this step first is it's going to be quite expensive to lay this out, because we're going to have to do the topos and the earthwork and so forth, figure it all out to get the foundations in here because of the constraints, you know, the 6,600 feet, et cetera. So anyway, I appreciate your support on this and happy to answer any questions for you.
Thank you. Why don't you stay on the line and we'll get more public comment, and then we will come back to you if commissioners have questions. Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Okay, that's fine. Do I mute this thing while I wait?
Probably a good idea. Yeah.
Okay.
And if we lose you somehow, we'll get you back on.
Okay. How do I mute it?
Probably Hyland can tell you that.
Okay. Sorry.
You don't have to mute it.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I think it's okay. I have to dial star and then something else.
Well, you know, just hang in there, then.
Well, it looks like you're calling in, so you could just mute your phone as well. Would probably
that's true.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Susan,
thank you,
Susan. This is Mike.
Yeah,
I just thought I'm going to ask you. You're the chair, but I wanted to ask, since we're on a roll with, you know, affordable housing and, you know, numbers, if the applicant could respond to our most recent discussion on affordable housing, because we're right there. I just don't want to lose the energy, the what we're thinking about. I'm just that one question.
Sure.
I
think we could have the applicant answer that. Is your vision for this project, you know, if we're talking about multifamily housing units, apartments, possibly duplexes, triplexes, is your thought for affordable housing or luxury apartments? Do you have a vision for any of this?
Yeah, well, I think if anything, we would probably do the 10% at this point, as it would lay out. It's quite expensive to build these projects. So that's what I'm thinking, but I would have to confirm that with Mr. Steiner, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So I can't really answer that.
All right. Okay. Appreciate that. All right. So let's see what other public comment we have. Hyland, who do we have in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have a raised hand from Betty Winholtz.
All right, Betty, you can unmute yourself.
Thank you. I want to refer briefly to, oh, I forget that that weird thing happens. Hold on a second. There we go. Just review briefly my email to you. I'm sorry I sent it late enough that it didn't get published, but talked about the compatibility of surrounding land and what I perceive as leapfrog development, which I think is something we're not supposed to do. My concerns that the environmental impacts will be different than what's in the MND, and I'm going to refer to that in a minute. The whole issue about water that was raised by several people, I think that's still on the table, and I think that to approve this amendment tonight really more appropriately should be wait until the water report comes out at the end of the month, and that you haven't lost anything because the zoning ordinance hasn't come back to you yet. And then let me jump into my comments on the mitigated negative deck, because I think that there are some things I would disagree with in there. But first of all, I would point out that the Fish and Wildlife has made no comment about this, and I think that that's important to note, and that we need to hear from them. I don't believe that the aesthetics have been addressed, even though it was identified that the Route 1 is, of course, a scenic highway, a byway, an all-American road. I don't see how that's even been addressed. You put anything there, and you have now, for lack of a better word, scarred the land site. Just like when we put in the sewer plant, you've scarred the land hillside. So this is all going to change, and I don't see how that aesthetics has been addressed at all. The idea that if you have 70 new homes, then you've got 140 more cars, or if it's only 40 new homes, you're still going to have 80 cars. And I don't see how that air quality has been addressed because you're right next door to the sensitive receptor of the old people's home. Nor under air quality was it addressed that the kind of rock that's in this hillside is the same kind of rock that's in the WRF site, which is that serpentine rock, which is a natural asbestos that occurs. And that hasn't been addressed. What else do I want to mention? The geology, you know, again, we're on the backside of the same hill where the two landslides occurred at the WRF, and the grubbing that occurred on the site to prepare it for the 10 houses is very different from the construction that's going to happen when you start digging into the hillside, which is where we got into trouble with the sewer plant. So I think that the landslide is still a real issue and not firmly addressed in the document. And then when it talks about public facilities, I think we're adding, 40 more homes to the fire department, the police department, as well as the 60 homes people want to add up at 3300 Panorama. So we're increasing, you know, the responses that are going to be required of our public facilities. And then I want to make note that under the utility section that it says that we have two groundwater basins that we use. And it was my understanding that we no longer use Choro. And so I thought that we only had the Morro Basin to use. And it also states that we still have a desal plant. And it's my understanding that we no longer have a desal plant. So I thought those were two errors that were stated in the document.
Betty, your time is up. Do you have a final comment?
Yes, please. I think that if the developer is only going to look at 40 homes, that this, if you were going to condition this after you look at the water report, that maybe you should go for medium density and not for high density, if you're going to change it at all. And I do have concerns about the good questions that you all were asking about density and bonuses and things like that. So thank you.
Thanks very much for those comments. Hylan, who do we have next in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. We have another raised hand from Barbara Dorr.
Thank you. Ms. Dorr, we will
good evening to all of you. I'm calling in to recommend that you deny this zone change to higher density and wait until the owner can return with a project and then the requested zone change at that time, so you know what you're approving. Although staff identified a couple consistencies with the general plan housing element, I am sure there are many, many more areas of inconsistencies with all elements of the new local coastal plan, general plan. This use does not preserve and protect natural resources as stated in the plan, and a high density structure will be an eyesore. An enormous 70 or 127 unit structure on scenic Highway 1 will shout loudly and clearly that Morro Bay doesn't care. This is not a suitable site for a high density units. The owner's representative stated that they probably only go with 30 or 40, you know, units. But if they sell the property, the new developer is going to go for maximum everything. And once you've approved the zone change, it's their right, plus bonuses. This change is an insult to all those who testified and worked so hard and so long on the new general plan and a vision for the future for Morro Bay. The staff report states the applicant has requested a land use amendment to facilitate future multifamily residential housing, though no development plan has been proposed at this time. There is no rush for zone change if developer has no plan. It is certainly fair to request the developer present the development plans and zone change request at the same time. Then you know if this project is truly consistent with our new general plan and future Morro Bay. No questions, no open-ended things, and no problems. I believe this zone change is inconsistent with our new general plan. But if you must approve it, please require that it be senior housing. The general plan states that 23% of our residents are older than 65. The land is adjacent to a transitional care facility, a suitable place for senior housing. The high-density zoning is a gift to the developer. Please get a public benefit in return. I'm sure residents would like you to seek a public benefit in exchange for the gift of additional profit to the developer. I know your commission has been discussing a public benefits or community benefits list, so developers know what you'd like. Please deny the request and instead consider changing the use for institutional or senior housing. And if not, wait till the developer, Mr. Steiner, can come back with a proposal for a zone change that meets his project that he's presenting. And page, the LCP may be amended to stay up to date with state laws and to continue to reflect the vision of the community. This project does not, and that statement is taken from your general plan. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate everything you guys are doing. Thank you.
There we go. Sorry, I was muted. Next in the queue.
Thank you, Chair. Up next, we have a raised hand from Kristen.
Kristen. That should be Kristen Headland. Welcome to the meeting.
Hello. Kristen Headland, Morro Bay resident. I, too, have a lot of concerns about this proposal. I'm here before you tonight to ask that you deny the zoning change. I don't understand why the zoning increase is being considered. When the property was originally bought, there are legal documents over at San Luis Obispo Public Recorder from 2014 that outline what this property is going to be used for. And I believe everyone received a copy of this. And it does, on the very last page, it gives six items that are the restrictions for this property. I won't go through all those items, but the last one, number six, says no further subdivision of these lots shall be allowed at any time. So I think there's a big restriction. This property we know was bought and it has changed hands. There is no guarantee that there will be homes built on this property. We had a house recently purchased in my neighborhood, and the homeowner is not able to get fire insurance on that house. And it's the way of the due to all the California fires, insurance companies are not granting homeowners insurance. And I think that for people that are looking at investing, they may have to consider that. The zone that they're asking for allows for homes, condos, hotels, professional buildings. So I don't understand why the zoning has to be so high when this person is proposing homes in which he's asking for 70. The city of Morro Bay, we have a big water concern. I understand that the height limit is 25 feet. I don't know how you're going to build condos at 25 feet. My concern also is for that hillside. The hillside is no different than the new sewer treatment plant, where once you start digging into it, you run the risk of the hill coming down. We have that senior living next door. I think that for these people there should be a lot of consideration for their health and safety, with the air quality, with the noise. I also want to know about the fire department. Does the fire department feel that it would be safe for there to be 70 or 40 homes built on a dead end? I think that that presents a big fire hazard for people trying to escape a fire and vehicles trying to come in and put the fire out when it sits along a hillside.
Ms. Headland, your time is up. Do you have any, like, a final comment? Okay.
I just ask that you deny the permit this evening, and I think that this proposed housing development is out of the character of Morro Bay at the entrance of our town. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. Eileen, who do we have next?
Thank you, Chair. We have no more raised hands in the queue.
All right. Then we will bring it back to the commission. All right. Couple questions were raised, and maybe the other commissioners can help with some of these. I do agree. Ms. Winholtz brought up, we don't have a desal plant anymore, is that correct? So some of these issues with our water availability, and then I think the one well we're no longer using, the groundwater basin. Should that be corrected in the report?
Yes. Oh, but Scott unmuted himself. Maybe he wants to answer this.
I was going to say the same thing, Cindy. We would just correct it. We get most of our water from the State Water Project. Mm-hmm. The groundwater basins and themselves, we only use them when they shut the State Water Project down for cleaning. So we use it, you know, a week or two out of the year, but it, but our water largely comes from the State Water Project, which is what the study and the environmental document says.
Okay.
And Scott, since you're on that topic about the State Water Project, what is the status of our allocation from State Water Project, and what is the future potential impact that Morro Bay could feel from their restrictions on giving more water out?
Good questions, Commissioner Rodriguez. I'm going to leave that for when we have the water report come before the Planning Commission at the next meeting on the 21st. That report is being prepared by the Public Works Department, and I don't want to speak for them. I haven't seen the report yet, but it deals with both our current water portfolio and the water equivalency unit, and so those questions will be answered at our next meeting.
Yeah, and I just want to finish with this on water, is the fact that, you know, we're not in the same, you know, condition or situation we were with water 10 years ago even. So water is going to be a real big deal moving forward on all projects. So I just want to reiterate that, so because other people have brought it up. But I want to see that report. I want to see what it says about our, you know, the limitations on what State Water will be giving to people. Since I worked in the industry for 22 years, so I know we're going to be getting an impact on that. Thank you.
Ms. Headland, I believe it was, mentioned the report that said no further subdivision on this property should happen. Does one of you want to address that?
That is a standard condition that's in our subdivision ordinance. They're not proposing to further subdivide the property.
Okay. Anybody else recall any questions that were brought up, concerns that we haven't already covered?
Susan, I wanted to ask that question that one of the last speakers asked, but they said that there were some legal documents restricting subdivisions. That's just a biggie. I think Christian asked that question about number of homes, and I don't know if that's valid or not, but maybe staff does.
Yeah, so I can answer that.
Thank you.
So what Kristen's referring to was what I wrote about in the staff report and what I discussed in my presentation, which is that there are tract map conditions that limit the building envelope on each of the 10 lots to that 6,600 square feet. And then there is a maximum building footprint. There are also development limit lines that limit where that footprint can go, drainage easements, ESHA requirements. So all of that was discussed in the staff report, and they will be subject to that.
Okay, thank you.
A real quick question, Susan.
Sure.
Cindy, I didn't quite understand this. Kristen Headland was saying if you upzone, this allows alternative uses like commercial. Is that what she implied?
Yeah, so I think what that is that in our current zoning ordinance, the R4 zoning is really kind of a quasi-residential commercial. Mm. Our current zoning ordinance does allow hotels and offices. In our new zoning code, it won't allow hotels and commercials, and that's why in my presentation, when I was describing the definition of the land use, and I said no commercial uses would be allowed if it were to be changed to high-density residential. So that's an important thing to consider. But they're not proposing to change the zoning, so the action before the commission tonight is land use, not zoning.
But the problem with that is once you change it, then they get this new deck of cards where they can do what they want. So them saying this is what we're gonna do is absolutely zero certainty on what's gonna happen. Mm-hmm. Because they can say that, but there's no commitment from the landowner or developer's part.
We would be Vice Chairperson Roshan, it's a fair point. But we would be implementing, depending on where this land use, proposal goes, we would be implementing it through the new zoning code.
It would exclude any commercial.
Correct.
My question.
So.
Okay. Where are we going now?
Susan, can I ask one more question only because it was.
Sure,
okay, they get their approval and they decide to sell the property tomorrow and somebody's going to go for the 70. How can staff, make sure that we do something that's realistic given our general plan and housing and everything in general? In other words, it just can't happen like that, right? Because somebody said they could just do that. So
Commissioner Rodriguez, that's correct. So the maximum that we see that they could put out there right now is the 40 units. There's no 70. 70 units would require amendments to the tract conditions of approval. Whether they could ever get to that number, we don't know because we haven't gone through that analysis, and we don't have a project in front of us. So right now what they can do, if this were to move forward, would be 40. And you heard the applicant, maybe they can't even do that. Maybe it's more like 30 based on the constraints and laying things out. But that would be the maximum, Chris Rodriguez, would be the 40 units that you're talking about.
Except, Scott, the idea of bonuses, right? Density bonus would change that formula.
Yeah, they would have to be giving us a greater number of affordable units to get those. Yeah.
That's right, but it still changes the density.
It can. It does. We still have footprint limitations related to the existing track conditions. So there's a lot of moving parts there. I would say that.
Right, but I don't want to say it's limited to the 40, because if you look at density bonus, that's not accurate, right? So I'm just saying that there's more movement by right than the 40 units.
Well, the density bonus affords you the ability to increase your density for providing the benefit of affordable housing. So
yes, I'm just saying we don't have certainty around that number under the upzone.
This is land use, not zoning. And the density is that, you know, is the, it comes out at that 40 whatever something units per, you know, for the site, is a acre and a half ish, I guess, of development footprint that's available. And yes, somebody could propose, you know, provide additional affordable units and request, or we'd be required to give them density bonus or increase the number of units.
My only point is that if we're looking for certainty and clarity, that the density number, the actual unit number, could still go above the 40 based on bonuses.
It could, but there are also the other limitations on the site. So I think that's what the applicant was kind of getting at, right? It's pretty constrained by the existing approvals, and so you don't get to go outside of those approvals. Those are what's available. You have those footprints, that's it. If you could, I guess, I think maybe it was Chairperson Stewart that said it, maybe you'd have a bunch of small units and you could get more, but I think they are really kind of constrained by the footprints that are available out there. As part of the existing subdivision and the approvals that are associated with it.
Well, there's a lot to think about with this, and I'm listening to my computer overheating as we talk. So I was trying to see if I could get the link on my iPad, and it doesn't seem to be working. I find this a really challenging and interesting proposition. We need the housing. I wish we could say that this would all be some sort of middle range housing, you know, apartment buildings, families, 1,000 to 1,200 square foot units, that would be fine for a family of four, you know, starter homes, that sort of thing. I would hope as the process goes forward, if it does, we could trust that the input from whoever the planning commission is at that point, from staff, from the community, helps us find innovative and interesting solutions to the kinds of problems and challenges we see. I think we could come up with some unique ideas for traffic challenges, for water issues. There are some really interesting technologies being developed where they're putting water panels similar to solar panels on buildings and drawing water out of the air that is drinking water. And it's not horribly expensive, you know. You know, maybe installations like that could happen where this actually is generating water. Again, I like the idea of smaller units, the smaller footprint, the open space, which is a requirement for this area. I think the adjacency to the Seashell communities, it could be an asset. You know, I love the idea Ms. Dorr had of making it senior housing. I understand how that may or may not be a likelihood, but there's also, I think some of the better senior developments are adjacent to all age family developments, and that sort of mix of, all ages of folks is a viable way to build a community. I think we need to accept that housing is one of the number one issues for all aspects of our economy here. We have our business owners, our workers who can't afford to live here. And so, you know, talk about the commuting issues and the air quality issues. If people can't live here and they're commuting in and out of town every day, that's causing issues too. So I would personally be in favor of accepting the staff recommendations and moving this forward, but certainly keeping quite connected with this project as it would go forward. Whatever we can do to help the applicant with some innovative ideas, with design ideas that make it less of an impact on the visual corridor there. There are things that weren't addressed because there isn't a plan, and once there's a plan, we can start to address them, as we've seen before. So, again, I guess I'd like to see this with a little vision, with as an opportunity, with some trying to move forward with solution-oriented ideas, recognizing that there could potentially be a lot of problems, but I think we also have safeguards built into the process. So those are my initial comments. Asia, let's go to you next. You're still, there you go.
I just wanted to actually ask Scott about what the typical process is when someone is coming to get permits to develop or build. Is it not normal? Is it normal? What I'm trying to get at is, isn't it normal for the development process to have a lot of back and forth where maybe a homeowner will come with an initial design and then they've paid for that design and then they have to work with the planning department or the planning staff to adjust that to meet local regs? Isn't that a normal part of this development process?
Commissioner King, it can be. A lot of times what happens when, you know, folks are getting ready to propose projects, they come in, they sit down with us and, you know, with their designer, with their architect, with their engineer or whatever. And we'll sit down and go over what the requirements are. We'll go over the submittal checklist that we have, the application form, all those types of things. And then what we pretty much always tell them, especially if it's a project of any size, is, hey, why don't you get your initial site plan put together and then send it to us? And we'll give you, you know, input before you put the package together, before you spend all the money, right? And so we try to work with folks on that front end to get the project, you know, in a place where it potentially could be approved. You know, that's kind of what we do. You know, in the planning process, you know, leading up to folks submitting applications for either discretionary or staff level review.
Okay. Yeah, it just I guess I don't know, you know, the position of the developer in this, but it just seems like in my experience coming forward with initial, you know, 10% designs or small designs, you know, preliminary engineering reports is a normal thing to do. And so thank you for clarifying. That's right now, that's my only comment. I have a lot more, I'm sure.
Thanks, Asia. Bill.
Thanks, Susan. You know, your comment, Susan, about staying in touch with the commission and the planners and developing a well-crafted project here are, I think, right on. The difficulty is once we upzone a project, the city and the planning commission loses quite a bit of control because now it's transferred to the landowner by right. This is a substantial upzone. Asia's questions were about that. This is probably one of the bigger upzones that's ever happened in Morro Bay. And it would be one of the larger residential projects. The policy is not anything that I think this commission disagrees with. The ability to get more housing, and especially affordable housing, and especially senior housing, is really important to this commission and this city. Displacement here is a real threat, and whatever we can do to make that better is good. My problem is that an upzone without a project, without conditions, does not guarantee that. If we upzone this project, the developer has every opportunity, the landowner has every opportunity to sell it the next day. By upzoning this project, we're increasing the value of that land substantially. The city, I do think, and our community should get some value out of that upzone. If we're offering to increase the value of the land, it's our job to come up with a process that gives not just the developer certainty and the landowner certainty, we need to give our community certainty. We can't depend on what one developer tells us. We know that because there's no plan. And a developer might be very well-intentioned, and I do think they mean it, but if they end up selling the property and they have to, or whatever reason, then we've lost control, but we've given away the value to the landowner rather than kept it as a negotiating right. When we talk about community benefits, that's exactly what we're talking about. An upzone allows the community to participate in that process. And it allows us to look at important things like, is the infrastructure adequate for this number of houses? Should there be open space play yards nearby? Should there be, I don't know, sidewalk issues or whatever it might be, firefighting that might be needed to complete this? These are all legitimate community benefits that could be reviewed in terms of the size and density of the project. Community vision at this sensitive site is a big deal. You're going to see it from Route 1, at least somewhat, and it's a gateway project. It's a gateway to Morro Bay. For us not to be able to influence what happens so that a developer could come in here by right and possibly raise the height through a density bonus, raise the number of units. And I agree with Scott, there's other limits, but the important thing is we don't know, and we're not offering the community any certainty. I think the solution is simple, that what would give me great confidence, I like what the developer's talking about, we need a plan to show it. And as Asia suggested, it could be a conceptual plan. It doesn't have to be engineering. It could be something that begins to show how it could be done. And then they would hear what the commission thought, they'd be able to hear what the community thought, and they could craft a project that fit the complexity of the site and justified the upzone. My hesitancy is I think this is just a huge gift to the landowner without giving the Morro Bay community certainty around these issues. There's got to be some way we can meet the developer partway, halfway, to give him confidence that this is what the city wants in terms of policy. This is something that the Planning Commission could support, and I would go on the record saying that this kind of development there seems appropriate to me, depending upon how it's done and the amount of affordability that goes into it.
Thank you for your comments, Bill. Scott or Cindy, could you address whether, if the property gets sold, do we lose control?
So if the property gets sold, and what Vice Chair Rushen was referring to was simply that, we don't have the project with it. So if it gets sold, somebody gets the benefit of the upzone without having a project associated with it. I think what he was getting at was the person that's the current owner sells it. He gets all the benefit from the city increasing, the density on the site, right? Because it's worth a certain amount now. And the idea would be, right, if you increase the density, it's going to be worth more, right? And so that developer would realize that by selling it right away, and would not have provided us the higher density housing that we were looking for.
Sure.
Now we would still you know, at some point in the future, probably get it, right? Because that's something that, you know, somebody would come forward with buying it to develop. But but certainly the current property owner, you know, would have realized that benefit of the city increasing the density out there and the value on the property without the city really getting anything for it.
And I'm, right. Okay.
And now Bill said all of these things, so like he can correct whatever I said about mischaracterizing it.
Yeah. Okay.
Bill, you're muted.
I think that's right, Scott. And my concern is we really are about housing policy. Right now, we could get 10% moderate if we upzone it the way it is. I think the value of upzoning that project so substantially to high density, we need to consider, you know, making sure we get either more affordable housing or, you know, low income. We need to talk about that. That needs to be digested. So I guess that's my concern, that whatever this landowner is offering right now, there's no certainty in any of it. It's all, you know, I think I like his vision, but we need to match that vision with the community vision, but with certainty. We can't do it on promises.
And we really don't have a way to do that.
Not under this application.
Right.
The way to do it, which is most common, is a project would be proposed.
Right.
And then we could, you know, kind of say, this is fantastic, give the guy certainty, support, and say, but with these community benefits or these aesthetic adjustments. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's a much more responsible process. Mm-hmm. We're not arguing policy here. We all really want the housing. What we're offering is the craft of the project, both aesthetically, infrastructure-wise, and the actual affordability that we get.
Mike, see your hands.
Hello. Okay, I'm unmuted, right? Okay,
yep.
Good. I'll say it a little bit differently than the way Bill said it, but when it comes to certainty and clarity with this project, there's very little or none. Now, on the other side, when it comes to questions, there's many. Regarding, number one, affordable housing, that was our big five. That fell in the Planning Commission's big five. So I do agree with Bill. Now, regarding the State Water Project, they are going to be cutting back seriously. They're not sending any more water to the farmers. We're next. Business and residentials are next. So we have a report coming soon with the water. I want to see that. Traffic, air quality, yeah, we're going to have issues with that. We heard that tonight. And the big one that I'm working on, public benefits. We haven't even talked about public benefits. We're going to approve a project without public benefit discussions. You know, so that hit me kind of a little bit in the gut because we were supposed to consider public benefits as part of all big projects, at least. We did, you know, we don't use names anymore, but this is definitely a bigger project in Morro Bay with the number of homes that could come to us. So I think I agree with Bill that we're with the policy, but we want more certainty and clarity because without that, we really are shooting in the dark. We don't know what we're really getting. And at the end of the day, that's why I asked Cindy this. The last time a planning commission had this was in 2009. That's our job. The planning commission's job is to do this land use work. You cannot expect us to do this kind of work in 2 hours. It just doesn't happen. And if you can, that's great. But I'm just saying that there's so many variables here. There's no clarity, no certainty, but there's a lot of hanging chads, a lot of questions still. So that's where I'm coming from. I kind of like what Bill said, but differently. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I'm going to bring it back to the applicant. Scott, let me know he is asking to make a comment.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, you are back on.
Okay, yeah, fine. I just wanted to assure you and that we work closely with the cities when we get projects approved and through the process and the building plans and so forth. We'll probably bring 3 or 4 sets in there to Scott and Cindy to review before we have the final program. So we're very good at that. The other thing is the city has total control over this. We have more green space and open space than probably any project in town right now. We have 4.5 acres of land, and we're only able to build on a little over an acre of. So a lot of that green space, open, it's attractive. It's what we designed. We got hundreds of projects we've done over 60 years. So we can give you examples of those if you'd like to see them. And, you know, what prompted this, too, is the sewer plant going in. I mean, you know, we had 10 custom home lots. But you know, the desire for those went down. But I just wanted to assure you that we'll work closely with Scott and Cindy on these plans, because we don't want to come in there and have them not like them. We want it to be acceptable up front. Spend less time on it and get what the city wants. So thank you for your time.
Thanks. Appreciate those comments. You know, I do think we all have a tendency to go to the dark side, but one would hope that, you know, an applicant is putting a lot of investment of time and money into something and does want to get a project through. I would also agree with him. I think the property probably lost a significant value with the proximity to the sewage treatment plant, the power lines overhead. I don't know if anybody went out and walked that site at all. I did. It's an interesting site. I think there could be a lot of constraints there that will be dealt with. Asia, your hand's up.
Yeah, thanks. I was able to go out and walk the site, and I would compare it to, you know, some of the other hillside developments of single family homes in Morro Bay on the east side of one. This is in my mind a really difficult discussion, because I often think, you know, density and more housing is only going to do the city good. It's only gonna create benefit. But I share too many of the hesitations and concerns. You know, what I know that what we need is affordable housing. And I know that there are mechanisms in place to help that to happen. And I also know that when projects come before us at the Planning Commission, that the discussion of community benefits in proportion to what allowances or conditions are being allowed through the Planning Commission's decisions, you know, that's something we make individual business owners do all the time. And so I just wanted to state that, like, that I'm a huge, huge proponent of the higher density. I'm a proponent of having the most units possible that fit within that site. And a lot of what is discussed, if you read through the mitigation document, a lot of these issues are discussed and dealt with. And satisfied me and for the most part, but I have to agree that that I think it's only fair to ask for more information and more in-depth process, like we do with smaller developments and smaller business owners as well. So I'm definitely in favor of higher density. I'm definitely in favor of allowing for more housing, but I have to agree with Bill and Mike that I think we need more in order to move forward.
So I might ask staff, is that possible in the order of things? That is, we are looking at a land use change and a zoning change. Can we condition those suggested changes on seeing a project first?
So you're making a recommendation this evening?
Yes.
To the City Council?
Yes.
it seems, a majority of you would prefer that the land use change is accompanied by a project. That is certainly information that we, Cindy and I, can convey to the council. I can convey, you guys need to be a little more specific about this, but I can also convey that sounds like at least a majority of you don't support the land use change by itself. Without the typical project plans that you would get with a project. So,
Scott, if I could interrupt. I mean, we don't support it without certainty. So we're all in support of the zone change, I think, but not without some certainty for the community. So that's the difference, right? It's not that we don't support the policy. We do. But, when the developer, and I love his vision, he assures us, no, he doesn't. He could sell it tomorrow. And then we're going to be dealing with a different landowner. I mean, we all know that we have to have a responsible process.
We still have the process, though, Bill, and even with a new landowner, we will have the process.
You're giving away the rights on the land. They can do by right without any kind of sharing a community benefit or even crafting the project. The city loses their negotiation point as soon as the landowner gets the upsell.
Yeah.
Susan, respectfully, I haven't had a chance to even weigh in on this.
Sure.
If I may.
Yes, go for it. Yeah.
I'm giving particular weight, as I usually do, to sort of a difficult question. It's always, what are the unintended consequences? And I'm giving particular weight to the Morro Bay Plan, which was a lengthy document, thoughtful document, made a great deal of effort to bring in the input of varied interest groups and citizens of all ilk around the city. And again, there's this short-term action plan to increase the zoning of this property from somewhere between 7 and 15, which is widely different from what the applicant is seeking. So first off, so there's something that I would call very strong public opinion that there should be something less than the requested density on this particular piece of property. And then, frankly, I'm fairly astounded that the applicant would ask for something that was so much greater than certainly what is the current zoning or what is the recommended zoning without any effort to really present the efficacy or the community benefit or a plan, however general it might be, as to exactly what he would do with that density. And as various of the commissioners have been saying, I don't think we should leave that to simply good faith. And there isn't anything other than the financial burden of providing some kind of a plan. And I would hate to think that when we're going through this effort that we might upzone only to this to be some sort of an effort to achieve one of the major entitlements, if not the major entitlement, and then the property is passed on to another developer who might actually deign to build something. With respect to where the property is located, I've read, the reports about, mitigating damage to the viewpoint, and I've read the discussion about how in the area we value, Hollister Peak and the ocean and Morro Bay. But there's no question that this entry, this gateway entrance into Morro Bay is also a valuable scenic piece of property. And, implicit in all this or the subtext seems to be, the environment is somewhat degraded by the community development facility there and the reclamation plant. So we no longer should be that terribly concerned about additional degradations to the view. And I disagree with that entirely. And also with what was said earlier by one of the phone-ins about this notion of leapfrogging, because there must be at least a half a mile, perhaps even a mile, that separates this proposal from where Morro Bay actually begins relatively dense development to the north. And the notion to put this size of a development on the periphery of water-based development just seems wrong-headed and out of keeping where we are in you know the second decade of the 21st century. Also, you know, if we are to do this, if we are really to grant the upgrade, now I'm aware that there are all the other restrictions in place, but we've really sort of incentivized the applicant to go on and try to overcome some of the additional obstacles, which right now are purported to be sizable and insurmountable barriers to more dense development. But I know from past experiences in Southern California in terms of lawyers and real estate consultants and lobbyists, you know, some of these obstacles, given enough resources, can fade away. So I'm not supporting eliminating this zoning. I'm not supporting upzoning without some real assurances in place. And also, you know, there's also an issue of precedent here too as well. We all know, you know, that Chevron is seeking to develop in northern Morro Bay, and there are the panorama lots with their desire to have greater density. And let's not forget, you know, the ranchers. People don't always think about this, but ranchers, you know, are also confronted with a need at one time or another to provide, frankly, you know, succession, heirs, children and grandchildren. And it's sometimes tempting to, you know, hack off a piece of the property and turn that into cash as a more dense development in order to sort of give something in the way of an inheritance for the bulk of the heirs, those who don't want to continue or know anything about ranching operations. So what I'm saying is you have all these people who are watching very intently what we might do with this property. And I can assure you that they will say, well, if you do it to this property, why not for me? And we might be hard pressed to explain, you know, why we would increase the density here and be reluctant to increase it in some of those other properties. And then and finally, I'm going to say with respect to this water business, and I don't know very much about this, but I do know that there is a very distinct difference between banking water that we did not need in the local reservoir and water equivalencies, and we never surpass the annual number of water equivalencies each year. There's a vast difference between that and this so-called water contract with the state to provide water, which is in no sense a contract. And we know from past experiences how water can be radically diminished to various communities simply because of chronic drought. So, you know, I'd like there to be some assurances in place that when we contemplate this size of a development, that we have the water resources not only in year one or year two or year three, but we have them in year 20, because I would not want... In fact, it's our responsibility to make sure that nothing ever happens to Morro Bay as the people in Las Osas are facing. So that's my say.
Thanks, Joe. I do think if the project, a project, were to go forward, all of those questions of available resources would have to be addressed in a timely fashion. So, you know, if we were to get to that point where, you know, it turns out we don't have that water, they wouldn't get it. So yeah. They couldn't get their project through.
Susan, I'll respond to that. At this point, we don't even have a project.
Exactly.
We don't even have a conceptual plan. Mm-hmm. We've recently required people down and, you know, on the waterfront to provide conceptual plans and everything else. So I'm getting back to the root of what we do. Give us something. We have nothing. We have no clarity. We have no certainty, and that's not the way to do things as a planning commission. You need to be able to make decisions based upon what you're looking at, not what you may see.
Okay, what I'm hearing then is it sounds like more of the commission feels that unless we can see some sort of plan, we would not want to go forward with an upgrade of the zoning.
And what I wanted to say before Scott stopped talking is the fact that he said he can go to the council and say that, you know, we were concerned that there was no project, but add, there wasn't even a conceptual plan. Because, you know, it's not just a project. Come on. You know, the applicant said they had four plans or eight. Come on, share. Sharing is caring.
I think the critical thing I would add to Susan's point is that I like the vision, but we need certainty.
Yes.
So what they would have to do is not just show us an intent, but bring this as a project.
So how do you get certainty, though, Bill? I mean, my challenge, there is no certainty in this world right now at all. We have, zero. Come on. So he could come forward with a plan and then change it a month down the road. So I guess you're suggesting if he made that investment in a plan, we'd at least have something.
No, not at all. Okay. I'm saying that with the project, we can condition the project. And we can say, okay, you need that. We can find that way to get to higher density, but we want a certain number of affordable units. And we can negotiate that. We might need certain infrastructure. Could be fire department equipment. We don't know. We could negotiate that. Mm-hmm. And it's not an intent. It would be a condition of the upzone. So that if a new project comes in, they can't, if they deviate from that upzone, right, from that project with its conditions, they have to start all over.
So the challenge I see is I don't know, and again, Scott and Cindy can perhaps put some light on this, but I don't believe we can make conditions on a zoning change.
Well, that's my point. That's why he needs
Okay. So where do we go? Any input from staff on that?
What I was kind of getting at before, Chair Stewart, was it seems like that's the desire of at least the majority of the commission, is that, you know, this might very well be a fine thing, right? The density and change the land use from low density to high density might be perfectly acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
But before we're willing to make that recommendation to the city council, I'm now saying this for the planning commission, that we would want it to come forward with project so that we can verify that that's the case. That's what I'm hearing, is that this is a good idea, but needs to have a project so we can see what we're doing. You know, what are we getting for this? What's the project going to be? In order for us to, you know, evaluate the request, we need to know what we're getting.
Yes.
And that's, I think some of you mentioned this, it's not uncommon. Land use changes are often accompanied by projects, but they're also, sometimes they're standalone. You did a standalone one over on Main Street, you know, a meeting or two of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. And that's, we can carry that recommendation forward to the city council. But one of you will have to craft a motion, and then we'll have to have a vote on it. And then that's what we'll do.
Well, Scott, let me ask a question. It seems to me that the only way to do this is deny the density increase and request that we're explain that we're in support of the density, but we want a plan to condition the city's giving of that density. And through that plan, we can't do it just by the density increase as requested today, but with a plan, then we could condition that plan and know exactly what we're going to get, and know that they can't switch it. They can't turn to another developer. They can't sell half the site to finance the other project. All these possibilities that could happen, the project would be clear, certain, and conditioned. So I guess my question is, we would make a recommendation to deny staff's recommendation on the, you know, upzone, the density increase. And what would we would try to find a way to show support for the housing effort and the site. I think most of us agree that this site would work. So I think we would add that, but I think it's not a responsible process without certainty around community benefit and community vision.
Bill, what if I like things phrased in the positive, if we can, what if we were to say we approve the idea of a density increase but we feel it would be urgent and required to see some sort of plan before we felt.
The trick is you're putting the cart before the horse.
Mm-hmm.
We love the idea of the density increase in the housing. We want housing. We want it affordable. We want it for seniors. All of that is right. Mm-hmm. The only way we can do that and condition that site is with a project. If we do it any other way, Scott went to the city attorney and asked. We can't put conditions on a density increase on the site. We can't do that. There's no way to do it. And once we give the density increase, if we say we approve the density increase, it then becomes by right. And mm-hmm. we've lost our leverage to, you know, negotiate community benefit, negotiate the aesthetics of the project. I do think this is a sensitive site. And mm-hmm. what it looks like is important, right? Mm-hmm. As well as maybe infrastructure needs that we don't even know or recognize yet. So we lose our negotiation power. The city loses its negotiation power. If we approve any kind of density increase without, I think, without conditions.
I would make a couple of clarifications to what Vice Chairperson Roshan said. Any project that would come forward in the future, whether it's a company with a land use change or a land use change were to be approved standalone, you would still have say over aesthetics and infrastructure needs, because it would be a project. You'd be able to condition it like any other project. But
our negotiation power would be less because they could do a certain number of things by right, Scott.
Mm-hmm. All I was saying is that those things are simply under the authority of the Planning Commission for any project that comes before you. It's not that you don't have that ability. You absolutely do.
But what isn't community benefit something that you negotiate before you approve the increase? Like, you know, I mean, I've never said yes to a deal until I knew what I was buying, right? And the city is offering value increase. And, you know, I love the vision of the landowner. He's saying all the things I want to hear, but he can't commit to them at this point. There's no way he can commit.
This is the process is common to see land uses come along with the project. There's no argument there. I was just simply saying that the things that you were talking about related to conditioning projects, don't have authority over aesthetics or other needs that might arise from a project, you do have them.
Our negotiation power decreases once we've upzoned, right? I mean, once we've upped the density.
Certainly that's, potentially, I suppose, yeah.
Well, not potentially, I mean, clearly.
Yeah.
That's what the developer is negotiating for, right? That's what they need. And that we're giving them value that they could cash in if they wanted the day after it becomes effective. And I'm not saying they will, but I want to offer the community, I think, more confidence that the process is a responsible one that doesn't depend on, you know, I assure you at a public hearing. I mean, I've never, ever done that in my life at a planning commission, had certainty.
And Bill, can I just piggyback on Bill, Susan? I was trying to make a positive out of this too, but I've never done that either. But I was seeing if Bill was willing to say the Planning Commission could not approve the applicant's request because there was no project or conceptual plan. You know what I mean? We can't approve. I'm asking Bill, how would you frame that? You know, because you just said let's deny it. I'm saying let's deny it for the right reason because we have no project or no conceptual plan.
I don't think you can. This is an up in density.
Okay.
So we have no method to condition it.
Okay.
So I'm saying to Scott, I think there needs to be, is there any in between? Doesn't it have to be a new application with a project?
Okay. I think that's what I'm hearing from the commission. That's what you want. I mean, I think it's fine to say that, and that's the message we'll carry forward to the city council. Make a motion and vote on it. That's what we'll do. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and Scott, my concern is, again, this is our work. You know, I don't want to pass on a lot of work to the council when they're already busy. This is what we should be doing. So I don't want to give up this job of figuring out this project that it's going to be a huge benefit to our community, housing, everything else. I don't want to send that message to the council. I want to say, give us a project and or a conceptual plan for us to make conditions of approval. Scott, is there any way we could get that support from the council without turning them off?
Joe, you had a point or a question?
Yeah, I would like to say to the city council, imagine if a Water Bay citizen comes up to any of us, one of the council people, and says, I understand that they're going to build a 50-unit housing development, 40 units, 50 units, at that location. What's it going to be like? And at this point, my response would be, well, I voted to upzone, but I really don't know what it's going to be like. Oh. And that's an unacceptable position for me.
I understand that, and I hear that, Joe. But again, it would still have to go through a process. It has to cover certain aesthetic things, height restrictions. It has to have a certain amount of open space. No, we don't know. Is it going to be California ranch style, or is it, we don't know these things.
Susan, that's not fair. That's diminishing the concern. We're talking about the number of affordable units, which may or may not allow a family to stay here. If we give away the value and we have no negotiating power, it's not about California Ranch. It's about how many families can we keep there. It's about the kind of necessary infrastructure that only the city can require. So I'm just suggesting that you don't give away your negotiating power until we know where we want to be on those issues. And we've done the best job we can to assure the community that the vision and, you know, the quality of this development is going to be there with as many affordable units as we can possibly negotiate.
So
you could negotiate California Ranch. But
that would be the goal, to increase the number of affordable units. Is that
big part of the goal? Yes, of course. It's the community benefit we would ask for.
Do you feel, as an architect, a designer, that by the very nature of being multifamily housing units, does that put it in a different category than, say, a freestanding, 2,500 square foot home? I mean, I know you can build luxury apartments, but when I hear they're doing multifamily, apartment buildings, to me, my mind automatically goes to a lower price tag.
Yeah. And
that could be very wrong. I mean, I totally accept that.
I think what happens, it's a bigger building. And so you do a nice window, and that multiplies times, 1,000 windows. So all of a sudden you get like nail on windows, or, you get a boxy building without any articulation. So yes, I do think we could get a better project as a gateway project to Morro Bay if we had that negotiating power. But still, the bigger negotiating points are going to be the ones that cost the most money, which are going to be infrastructure or affordable units. And why would we say 10%, which is the code, which is fair, when we're giving them this huge density increase where we could easily ask for more units? And, I think that the landowner would understand that and would find a way to negotiate our support. Because we do want to see the project happen, but I'm absolutely not comfortable doing it with, looking at his past work. It's got to be how they'll commit with conditions to this site.
And for, if I can add, with all respect to the landowner, if something were to happen, if we upzone, something were to happen and the property has to be sold to a different developer, that increase in land value will demand a different kind of project because it'll be a more expensive piece of land, which puts a future owner, they'll need to produce a different project to, you know, have a viable business.
Or it will sit vacant, you know, right. Either way. Yeah.
So.
I think we're trying to find that middle ground where we really like the proposal. And as an architect and a planner, I think there's ways to handle that density on the site that still makes it a good project in the landscape, makes it a good project as a gateway to Morro Bay. I think there's ways to do that.
I agree.
But I don't think we can do it without a certain amount of certainty and leverage to make sure that if it's not this developer, the next developer, you know, to Asia's point, it's like absolutely good. If the next guy pays a lot of money for that site, he's going to have less money to make a good project. He's going to have only be able to do what he can do to make it happen. So in many ways, I think by us asking for a legitimate process, we're actually getting more surety that we're going to get a project. I guess would be my point. And we really do want an affordable housing project, probably not just a luxury project, right? And so if all of a sudden the cost of the land goes up, we're talking a whole different proposal, possibly.
And Susan?
Yeah, sure.
I'd also like to make the point again of you know, not simply accepting out of hand that the 40 units that the applicant is proposing is the appropriate density. Let's not forget, again, in the Morro plan, in the Morro Bay plan, it states 17 to 15 per acre, and not a total, and that doesn't come to a total of 40 units on the property. Even. I'm not suggesting 40 is inappropriate, but what I am suggesting is that we should simply not dismiss what's currently in the Morro Bay plan as the appropriate density for the property.
Okay. So can I ask Scott, there is no in-between here, right, Scott? We would, to get a project we could condition, we would have to ask the applicant to actually submit for a project rather than just a density increase.
Yes, Vice Chair Rocha, that's correct. So, you know, if you're looking to craft a motion, you have a couple of options. You could simply provide us that direction because you're making recommendations to City Council today, right? So you're you can just simply, you know, come up with what those few, you know, probably even bullet points, if you will, if you want, you know, along the lines of providing a project that the land use change shouldn't go forward without that. Certainly saying that you support in concept the idea of a land use change, but we need to have a project so we know what we're getting.
Second, Scott, you did it.
Yeah, so I think that's all fine, and I think that's we can carry that water to the council, not a problem.
Yeah, good.
So let's make a motion, and I would say we enthusiastically support the density, and what we're requesting is a project that we can condition to get certainty around the number of affordable units, the infrastructure, and the gateway aesthetics of a project of this magnitude and scale in Morro Bay. And this would also allow us with the project to go to Joe's point and really see if the density they're suggesting is appropriate on the site. I'm more positive about the density, but I think that would be the outcome of a submittal as well. So the proposal really is that we would deny the application for a density increase, but enthusiastically support density around a proposed project.
or we can't recommend to the city council the upzoning at this time, but we would enthusiastically support it.
I take that as a friendly amendment.
Bill, are you suggesting that we are enthusiastically supporting the density as proposed by the applicant?
No, we're enthusiastically supporting density increase. And the thing that the project will do is it'll, like the good thing about a project is it really tests the results. And this is such a large density increase that a project will show us, well, that's way too big for the site and the 1.5 acres. Or it'll show, no, they really, this is going to fit there. So we'd be able to solve both problems. And then also the community gets a chance to look at this kind of density. So we don't give away by right the density until we know that it works with a project and we can condition the project. But I think the density has to be proven by the proposal. Does that make sense, Joe?
So it's a density as yet to be determined.
I guess we should make sure that that's clear. We enthusiastically support increased density on the site, but to be determined by the project and, you know, the conditions on it. Yeah.
With Asia's friendly amendment, Bill?
Yes, please.
Which was something.
Can you say it again, Asia?
We cannot recommend upzoning at this time, I think is what I added. Without the without a proposed project that we can condition.
For certainty on the density increase. What do you think, Scott? Does that say what we wanted to?
I like what Scott said, Bill. I like what Scott said.
Scott was better? Okay, let's go with Scott.
Well, he was clear.
I think all that works. I think that. Good. I just want to be able to tell the correct story to the council and convey what the commission wants. So I think I have that. I think I have that now. I don't. Cindy, do you need to
try it again? And I'll just shake my head yes this time.
I was just going to say before you come to a conclusion, it looks like the applicant would like to speak one more time. I don't know if that's appropriate or not.
Sure. It's been a long night. Let's let him speak. There he is. And I think you're still muted. If you could unmute. There we go. You should be live.
Okay. Sorry, guys, about that.
No, that's fine.
Okay, I want to say, and Scott can confirm this, but we did several conceptual plans, a couple that were they're larger than what we think we can get on there, and then one around 40 units. So I can PDF that stuff to you tomorrow if you want. I mean, we did some work on it. Spent a lot of money on it already. So, you know, and they're quite a nice design.
Well, I think we have to make some sort of decision tonight. I would love to see what your plans are, and I'm sure the other commissioners would be interested as well. We'd have to check with Scott and Cindy on the protocol on that. And then the timeline, you know, if we were to change our recommendation, it would have to come back to the commission to do that. And you may want to take it on to council before all that.
Yeah, the plan, like I say, to have a really hard as far as citing everything, we're going to have to do the topo studies and all that. But we have a very good concept, and we designed nice, attractive projects. So anyway, if you give me some direction on what you want me to do.
All right, Scott, is that a possibility for us to take a look at that?
I don't think the plan designs that they have, you know, at this point are to a level that is going to give the Planning Commission the desired certainty that was expressed.
Okay.
they're preliminary plans for sure. You know, and that was kind of, I think they were really doing a fit with it, you know, just to kind of like, this is what could fit on the site. but I don't think they're really to the level that you're not really used to seeing a development application come forward with. So I don't know how useful that would be.
I would agree with Scott, and I think that would probably muddy the water because they did not reflect consistency with the subdivision approvals, and so it is a complex site.
And Cindy, wouldn't it have to be a project application for us to condition it? Right now, the application is for an increase in density, nothing more.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's how we noticed the project, is that there was no development proposed at this time, and that's...
So we would have to do this again, right, with the proposal.
Yeah, and Bill, I would just get back to wanting Scott to give us some clarity on the motion, because I appreciate the fact that the applicant stayed on the line and was willing to chime in, but we didn't, that wasn't going to work. So that's not going to work. So let's just move on to Scott and his recommendation. You and Asia got it right. Scott's more the, he has to talk to the council. Oh,
Scott says things really well. Okay, Scott.
I know.
Great. Put me on the spot.
Bill has to agree, and then Asia has to second that.
Well, I mean, Asia came up with a portion, right, that indicates that the Planning Commission cannot make the recommendation for the land use change at this time. And the preference by the commission would be that it return with a project associated with it. So the land use change would return with a project associated with it. That the commission in general supports the concept of the land use change and the increase in density, but that is predicated on receiving a project along with it so that you can see that it's a right size and fit for the site.
Well, but I think it's important that we say that we also can condition the project around community benefit and infrastructure needs. So, without that certainty that it not only fits, I mean, we need to say the community benefit part, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'll add that in. Sure.
Okay. You didn't say it as nicely the second time, Scott.
I know. So you put me on the spot.
So, Asia, do you second that, Asia?
Or do you or agree?
Asia, or I will.
I've never seconded, so I'll second it.
All right, Asia. We have a motion. Yeah, and a second.
All right, any further discussion? It's very quiet.
Please, no.
You just got a kid to take care of. I just
say a couple things. If we're going to have a blank check that we have to write to satisfy infrastructure, city infrastructure and so forth, this thing's not going to work, and we'll just build the houses. I mean, we tried to do something that was good. You needed housing there, and we had the sewer plant, so we thought this would be a good compromise. But if I get too many roadblocks, we just won't be able to afford to do it. More affordable housing units, extra infrastructure funds. I mean, we have to see what we're talking about.
So, John, it's John, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. The intent is not to gouge the developer. The intent here is to get, you ask for confidence and certainty in your opening words. We're looking for the same benefit for the community around your vision and around the quality of the project. We're not trying to gouge you, and we're looking for a way to share in the benefit of the increased density. And we're willing to negotiate that. That's all part of it. So there's no threshold here to say that we expect more. This is a position where we're negotiating when we still have some influence, rather than giving you the density increase before we know the quality of the project. In other words, this is not a trick where we're trying to exploit the developer, but it is a fair response that we're trying to find certainty from both sides.
Right. No, I understand. And I get your angle on it, but from ours, please understand, we don't know we have a project. We have to throw all this extra money at it up front before we even
That's what the entitlement process is.
Yeah, but Bill, I think we have a point of order, because we shouldn't be, we're going back and forth with the applicants.
Okay, sorry.
We should probably, You know what I mean? We can't negotiate that way.
I'll be quiet. Okay. Yeah, I got you. Okay, well, I'll call Scott in the morning. We'll figure out what I need to do next.
Yeah. Cindy and I will talk with Ms. Nenshi and go over what needs to happen moving forward.
So. All right.
Okay, thank you all.
Thank you so much for hanging in there with us.
You betcha. Have a good evening.
You too. All right. So back to the commission. We have a motion on the floor. We have a second. And I think we are finished with discussion on it. So we can call the vote.
Just a point of order of my own.
Sure.
Question, the status of the MND, maybe this is a...
Ah, you're right.
But I wasn't sure if the PC needs to make a decision on adoption of the MND or if it's the council that adopts the MND. So
the council adopts it. I think the recommendation, you know, from the planning commission that at this point is to not move that forward either because we don't have the project. So I think that's, yeah.
Maybe we should add that to the motion so it's clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not approving the density increase as requested, and we would not be confirming the MND.
Okay, that's good. Then, Commissioner King, you are the second on the motion that Vice Chair Roshan just amended. Will you accept the change?
I accept it.
Thank you.
I second it.
All right, Cindy.
Okay. Commissioner Ingrathia.
Yes.
Commissioner King, excuse me.
Yes.
Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Roshan.
Yes.
Chairperson Stewart.
I'll vote no.
Okay, thank you. Motion passes 4-1. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. That was a lot of good conversation and hard work. And I do hope we eventually see a project coming back that we can look at. We have nothing under new business. We have nothing under unfinished business. Planning Commissioner comments and future agenda items. Anything?
Susan, I just want to make a comment that I am now a delegate for California's APA. Oh. So we have a meeting scheduled for June 23rd. And we will be discussing, equity in zoning policy guide. Equity in zoning policy. So it's right on that plate. So I will be reaching out to you folks for input. So I'm a California delegate, so this will be a national discussion on equity in zoning policy. So that's it. So I became a delegate last week. I just thought I'd share that with you.
Congratulations, and take good notes.
Sounds we'll really do, but I'll be reaching out for your input, though, you know, what you guys, you know, might want to see on that. Okay, so that's my only notice. Thank you.
Great. Sounds good. Any other comments, future agenda items? Nope. I know we probably have a very full agenda ahead from staff, so community development director comments. Scott?
What was I going to... I guess I don't have anything.
Okay.
Hey, Scott, is Cindy still there?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you guys did a great job, by the way, on that report. I mean, that was an outstanding job you guys did.
Thank you.
Over time, 150%. You guys just did an outstanding job and got us to where we needed to get to. So I just wanted to thank both of you. Great job.
Thank you.
All right. Well, then I think we can adjourn and I can turn off my hot computer. Although it stopped making funny noises, so we may be okay. So our next meeting, it says it will be at the Memorial Building, but stay tuned. We will see how pandemic numbers are going. But it will be June 21st at 6:00. Either via Zoom or in the building. We'll see.
Yeah, I will let you guys know as soon as I find out if we're going to be in person or via Zoom. It seems like right now we're probably going to be Zoom, but we're talking about it internally, so decision hasn't been made yet.
Terrific.
And Susan, yes, as the chair, I did tell you I can't attend that meeting because I got a prior commitment. So I will be writing you an email with CC Scott. Perfect. So I will not be. So if there's anything that you guys think I should be part of, you know, as far as I really want to review that water report from State Water Project. So that's okay. Very important. So I'll get that anyway, but I may send my, you know, my input via email if I have to.
That sounds good. So okay. Either I think send it directly to Scott or possibly okay. To myself and Scott, just as long that's as right. Just two of us on that.
So I won't be on that meeting. So, okay. But I'll see you guys in July.
So, and I wanted to add, I can't be in person at that meeting. I'm going to be out of town. So okay. I could do Zoom, but I can't be in person if it happens to be in person.
Okay. Well, we had that work before, so.
Yeah, Zoom's available to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Sounds good. All right, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank
Have
you.
Have a good one. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Night. Bye.